Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray@rte.ie. I don't know if you know this, but outside the Radio Centre in RTE, there are a number of bus to commemorate people who've gone. There's one at Gayburn and various other people. Well, today they unveiled Together We Will Explore, a sculpture by Orla Debris, and it's to commemorate Marion Finucane. And it's a beautiful sculpture. I saw it out there. It's in bronze. And there was a little unveiling today, and John, Marion's husband, was there in the family, and you know, Joe Duffy was there and Dee Forbes. And it's the first time that there's actually a sculpture as opposed to a bust, a likeness of the person. And it's the first time there is anything dedicated to a woman, which is, I suppose, historic. Orla Debris is the sculptor, and she explains the sculpture. I always get mixed up, that's why I'm stumbling over my words. So there's she's the sculptor, and it is the sculpture, you see. She explains, while researching Marion's life and work, and after studying the RTE documentary, which was brilliant, about Marion's life, the words that her husband John used to give insight into Marion's work resonated with me and helped inspire this sculpture. Together we will explore. And that's a phrase that Marion used to describe her process of listening and recounting the lives and stories of the people and subjects she researched and platformed. This sculpture features a pensive seated figure with upturned palms. In one hand, there's a group of people representing a microcosm of humankind. And in the other hand, there's a tree, a symbol of evolution and growth over time. And the piece focuses, says Orla Debris, on Marion as a catalyst for change. She had a profound connection with her audience. Her words were both nurturing and radical, enriching the lives of her listeners, as well as influencing greater societal change in Ireland. And Orla says, I wanted to make a strong, positive sculpture that would provoke the viewer to reflect on the essence of who Marion Finucane was, the extraordinary work she did and the people she connected with. And it's out there and it's outside and it's a thing of beauty. And it'll be 3 years in January when that'll be the anniversary of Marion Finucane's death. And we wish everybody well, because obviously a day like today brings back memories. So we wish them well. 51551 ray@rte.ie. I see that they've finally revealed the name of Prince Harry's biography, memoir, autobiography, whatever it is. It's called Spare, which I thought was an odd name for a biography. But then it was explained to me that it's a reference to the royal family's phrase, heir and a spare. So his brother was the heir and he was a spare. So he knew where he was positioned in the royal family. It was originally to be released in late 2022. And then, of course, the Queen died and it was put off. But it's going to be available now on January 10th, 2023. And it's called Spare and has a picture of Prince Harry on the cover. And I wonder, does he know that that spare in Ireland, isn't it? It's quite derogatory. You know, the way you spare you. I don't know if that was used in your neck of the woods, but down in Kildare, if you were referred to as a spare, it wasn't complimentary. Anyway, I'm interested in the story behind the story. Like, have there been changes because the Queen died? I'd be interested in all that, and that'll only come out in years to come, I'd say. We were on Grafton Street on Saturday, and there was a queue outside the Lego shop. Well-ordered queue, but there was a queue. And I was wondering, were they doing that just to create a bit of buzz, a bit of fuss around the place? And then I looked into the shop and it was full, so they needed to have a queue. The reason I'm telling you about this is that there's a Lego cafe, a sort of pop-up Lego cafe, opened for adults in Dublin as part of World Mental Health Month. So it will only be here for 2 days. It's part of an initiative for World Mental Health Month, allowing adults a safe space to enjoy the benefits that come from playing, and particularly with Lego. And we've heard over the last couple of years how people find the process of building with Lego bricks very mindful. It's sort of productive mindfulness, and you're there in the moment, all the things that we've been encouraged to do, that for some people, building Lego give that to them. Chris Clarkin, creative director of the Boys and Girls Creative Agency, said the intention for the Lego Brick Cafe experiment was to design an inspirational space where like-minded people can meet and play while sharing ideas. I'm excited to see how people interact and respond to building with bricks in a setting like this one. And it's in Hen's Teeth, Blackpitts in Dublin. I wonder, will they pop up around the country? A little bird, a little godwit, is a record breaker because he or she or they have travelled from Alaska to Australia without stopping. They know this because it's been tagged, and they can monitor the little bird's progress by satellite. Its number is 234684, and it travelled 13,560 kilometres continuously. The five-month-old bird, which is a godwit, G-O-D-W-I-T, set off from Alaska on the 13th of October, and satellite data appeared to show it didn't stop during its marathon flight, which took 11 days and 1 hour, and ended up in southern Australia. That's mad, isn't it? Nature just amazing. And while we're on nature, have you ever heard of an aye-aye? A-Y-E, A-Y-E. They're a Madagascan primate with big eyes, bushy tails, sensitive ears. And the main thing is that they have big, long fingers. And there's a brilliant article in The Guardian today about the aye-aye and what they use one of their fingers for. And we tracked down Brian Cox from one of his programmes talking about the aye-aye. I'd never heard of an aye-aye before today. And I'm wondering, are they called aye-aye because they're bulgy eyes or something else? Somebody might explain that to me. 51551. So Brian Cox, tell us about the aye-aye.
The most startling is this central finger here. It's bizarre. It's got a ball and socket joint, for a start. So it has complete 360-degree movement. It feels to me almost as if it's broken, but it isn't. It's just, you can move it around in any direction.
And it does. And it uses it to pick its nose. If there was an Olympic sport of nose-picking, the aye-aye would win. But that's the picture and the article in The Guardian is worth checking out today. And if you have little people in your life, they'll be fascinated by the aye-aye. By its appearance and by its name. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Good afternoon. The great Stevie Wonder, I Wish, on RTE Radio 1. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. The aye-aye has one very long finger on one hand, maybe on both hands, and it is used to get food from inside a tree through a hole in the bark. Obviously, used to pick his nose as well. That's what it says in the article. That's a great song, isn't it? I wish. Time to tell you about our quiz. I'm looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we have a prize, and it's a two-night stay for two at Carton House, which is the first Fairmont hotel in Ireland. It's set on 1,000 acres of sweeping parkland. There's ancient woodlands, lakes, and there's the meandering River Rye. And it makes it the most picturesque backdrop for an autumn stay. And it's just 25 minutes away from Dublin. Cartonhouse.com. You will stay in the garden wing, have breakfast in the house, with a capital H, on both mornings, and dinner in the atmospheric Kathleen's Kitchen on one of the evenings. So here's your qualifying question today, this Thursday afternoon. Spare is the name of the autobiography that will be released by which former red-headed royal? Just to check if you're paying attention. Spare is the name of the autobiography that would be released by which former red-headed royal? 0818715925. That's 0818715925. And good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
The Wonder opens in Irish cinemas on the 2nd of November and on Netflix globally from 16th of November. And Niamh Algar is one of the stars of the movie, and she joins me now in Studio 7. Niamh Algar from Mullingar.
Ray Darcy.
From Kildare.
Thank you for having me on.
So G-A-R, G-A-R. People have spotted that before, obviously.
G-A-R, G-A-R.
Yeah, your name ends with G-A-R, as does the place where you come
I've
from.
I've never put that together before.
Go on.
Genuinely, I've not. That's just blown my mind.
You're having me on.
I'm not.
That's ridiculous. You've never put that together before in your life.
No.
Oh no, I'm worried about my brain and how it works and how it sees the world.
Because my initials are NA, and when you know when you quick sign something and you just go NA.
Yeah.
It's like also non-applicable.
Non-applicable.
Yeah.
Yes,
so
yes.
That's
messed
that's
with
caught
your life.
Me out.
Yes,
yeah.
Great to see you.
Glad to see you too.
Yeah. Congratulations on the movie. And this is mad because it's set in the Midlands, and you are from the Midlands. It's sort of like working from home in a sort of weird way.
It's all come full circle.
Yeah, yeah. Like, this is the first period drama you've done.
Yes. Yeah, I did a movie, Censor, that was set in the 80s, and I suppose now that's considered period.
Right, yeah, well,
but this
yeah.
is the first kind of costume drama that I've ever done and had to wear a corset.
How was that for you?
I nearly passed out, I'm not going to lie. There was a scene where I had to run across a field towards Florence's character, and she kept laughing at me because every time after every take, I was getting bluer and bluer. Like, you can't breathe in those things.
Yeah.
Like, I understand why, you know, women would suddenly just drop or faint uncontrollably, because you can't, like, your organs shift in it. You'd have to eat, like, soup or smoothies.
Isn't it brilliant how things have changed? Because now you can put on the Lululemons, you know?
I live in tracksuits and runners.
Yeah.
So, like, I was wearing heels last night that were, I was... I could, you know what I mean? I was
you
the
were tall. I saw the photograph.
Yeah, I'm 7 foot.
You were 7 foot?
I was the same size as my boyfriend, and he's 6 foot two.
Yes. And so, Emma, who wrote the book that the movie is based on, Emma Donoghue, she's a tall woman.
She is, yeah.
But you dwarfed, she looked dwarfed by you.
Yeah, she was delighted.
how tall were the heels? How big were the...
I don't know. We didn't measure. We should measure them. I have them. I still have
them. Well, I can do the maths because I looked up what height you were.
5'8".
No, it says 5'7" on.
That's a lie. I can't change that. That's really annoying me. So I'm definitely 5'8".
Right,
yes.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
And if your boyfriend is 6'2", right?
Yeah.
That's so.
Four could you do that?
Yeah, I can't. That's 6 inches.
6 inch heels.
Yes, 6 inch heels. You had on.
No.
Wow. Look at you. So The Wonder. Tell us about it. So it's set about 10 years after the famine in the Midlands.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, so it's set in 1862, 10 years after the Great Famine, and it tells the story of Lib Wright, played by the incredible Florence Pugh, who is a English Nightingale nurse who is sent over from England to Ireland, to the Midlands, to this community where this young girl who has alleged to have not eaten in 4 months, and it's the character of Anne O'Donnell, played by Keila Lord Cassidy, who in this film, like, I think Keila was like 10 when she filmed it, and she's unbelievable.
Brilliant.
This is her debut.
She's brilliant, yeah.
She's really like an extraordinary actor. And it's directed by Sebastian Elio. Oscar winner.
Yeah.
Chilean director. It stars Kieran Hines, Dermot Crowley. You've got this like amazing cast. Like my first day of filming, you know, it was Kieran Hines, Brian Efferburn and Florence, and they're all doing this. And Toby Jones. Like, it's a... Phenomenal
and
cast.
You're in there.
Oh, I'm in there.
So you're a slavey to the O'Donnell family, which is a maid, is it?
Yeah, so slaveys were considered, you know, someone who had no husband and had no kids.
Aha.
So they belonged to the family.
Right, okay.
So I play Kitty O'Donnell. She's a relative of Anne O'Donnell. And you got Elaine Cassidy, who is Keila's mother.
Which is brilliant, I think.
Yeah.
So the mother and the daughter are real life mother and daughter.
Yeah, yes. an amazing experience to see the two of them working together on this. And so Slavey, she was this. So, you know, Kitty is this character winning it, and she's, you know, she's out in the field, she's cutting turf, and we do that all for real.
We get to you cutting turf, but just to give people a context of the whole thing. So it's a small town. There's this sort of patriarchy, the elder Lemons, they're all male.
Yeah.
And this is the scene where Florence Pugh arrives, and she's been given her task to watch this little 10-year-old who hasn't eaten for 4 months. And we'll play that clip, and then we'll play a clip of you in it.
Donald doesn't eat.
If a patient in the hospital refuses to eat, we use force.
The girl is not to be forced.
Nor interrogated or badgered.
But she is also not to be denied food should she ask for it.
The girl has lived miraculously without food since her 11th birthday.
Miraculously is not how she's done it.
The purpose of the watch is to determine exactly how Anna O'Donnell has survived with no food.
So you want us to watch her?
Yes.
Great premise for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you can hear the disbelief in some of the voices there. And then there's the people who want it to be miraculous.
Yeah.
Because they might have a saint on their hands.
Yeah, and they want to hold on to this miracle, to this something special, something that, you know, can't be explained.
Mm.
And, you know, for a community like that, especially after such a tragic time within Ireland, you know, it was something that gave hope. And yeah, as you said, you've got these very strong voices. You've got fact versus faith.
Yeah.
And, you know, Florence's character of Lib is, you know, she's a scientific mind. She speaks in fact, and, you know, she does not believe that this child could be alive, having not eaten anything in 4 months. And so, you know, she's going in very, very sceptical mindset. But as the story progresses, Keela's character of Anna begins to deteriorate, and we begin to understand why.
Yes, yeah. And you are there, you play Kitty, and this man, the love interest, arrives, and he's a journalist from England, but it transpires that he's originally from the town. And Kitty, your character, would have went to school. No, you didn't go to school. You would have known him. And this is an encounter between you and Florence Pugh in the middle of a bog.
Mr. Byrne, you know him. I knew him when we were little. And then he went to school and I didn't. Ah, he's a newspaper man now. His family locked themselves up in their cabin after he went away. When the hunger came, they nailed the door shut from the inside.
Why did they do that?
Privacy. Save themselves the shame of dropping down dead in the street.
Hey, you like the old gritty roads, don't you?
I do. I'm drawn to them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you get offered stuff that you say no to, obviously, I would imagine.
Yeah. But no, I'm drawn to the stories. I'm drawn to the stories and drawn to the characters, and especially the filmmakers and passionate ones. And very lucky that Sebastian is so passionate, especially about, you know, this story. And and you know, he always has quite a very strong kind of female led narrative at the helm of his stories.
Yeah, you're the youngest of five. From Mullingar.
I am.
Right. So you were the performer, were you? Was that it?
Yeah. Well, I was the performer. I found my place in the family at trying to make people laugh. That was it. You know, we were trying to find your role in your family. And I joined there was the Mullingar Arts Centre was what I joined when I was about 8, 9, 10. And I just loved it. I loved, you know, getting up on stage and getting lost in stories. And I think it was like when you come from, we grew up in the countryside, and I was obsessed with TV and film, and that was my way of, I suppose, of understanding the world a bit better. Yeah.
It's a crazy world, isn't it? You described actors as creative misfits. Well, everybody who works in the film and TV industry.
Absolutely, and radio.
No, I don't know. I'm pretty normal, I'll have you know. I suppose people who are misfits find their tribe in acting. Is that part of it?
Yeah, someone asked me today, is like, what makes a good director? And I think it's communication. The idea of being able to communicate with one another and find that common ground of all kind of telling the one story, and how each of us does that is all quite unique. And it's like I found my way into acting in such like a quite a unique way, actually. It was funny enough, Johnny Jaw, who was the first AD on this film, so they, you know, their first assistant to the director. And many years ago, I was a trainee production designer on The Savage Eye.
The Savage Eye, yeah. Which you featured on screen as well as a nun.
Well, this was it.
Yes,
so
okay.
Johnny said to me on the Friday.
This is now back in 2014 or thereabouts.
Thereabouts, probably before that.
Yeah, right.
And Johnny said to me, he's like, listen, do you want to come in on Monday and be in a scene? And I was like, okay. And I was, at the time, I was trying to apply for The Factory, which was the drama school, which is now Bow Street. And he's like, I was like, what's the scene? He's like, as grand, I think you're a nun or something. And it was like, it turned out to be this like Coca-Cola, like, you know.
Did.
Yeah, with Dave McSavage. And But I got paid for it, and I was able to pay for my drama course. I was able to pay for the course.
Right.
And that was, you know, that was the kind of the start of it for me. And then to come back around now in 2022 and be working with Johnny on this film. And I said to him, I was like, you're probably the reason why I'm acting, because I got kind of given that break of being able to, I suppose, financially support myself through.
So you got
drama.
The bug.
I got the bug. I got the bug long before that.
No, but you realise that you could actually get money for it, and that sort of strengthens the attraction, doesn't it?
It strengthens the attraction, but it was always that idea of going, I love what I do, and if I can, you know, put a roof over my head and feed myself, that's it. And I never wanted to be kind of dependent on anyone else. And I worked part-time jobs for years before.
It's an exciting time, isn't it, to be a woman in this industry, because there's so much happening. There's so many streaming services, and they're all trying to outdo each other. And then you have terrestrial television, and then you have Hollywood. There's a lot of stuff going on, isn't there? More than ever before.
So much choice. I think because now we've got, you know, all these kind of platforms, and you know, people. It's like you said, you find your tribe. You find what streaming service is for you, and it's not just all in one place, is that you have all this, you know, variety and also, you know, actors can go from movies into TV, and there's now this amazing crossover that people are doing both. You had like Kate Winslet last year, who, you know, she did Mare of Easttown, which was
brilliant.
TV, and you know, it kind of puts the small screen onto the bigger screen.
Yes, so you're effusive in your praise for Florence Pugh.
I am. I love the girl. She's amazing.
Yeah.
I can't help it. No, she, and I've always said this, and it's when you've got a lead who is so kind, but you know, she's so intelligent and incredibly talented at what she does. But she come in every day with so much amazing energy, and that just seeps out into the
biscuits.
Yeah, there was a biscuit stand. She'd bring in like massive boxes of these biscuits. I don't know what company it was, and donuts. So it was like, it was far from a famine on the set. And that's, you know, it's like small gestures like that it speaks volumes to, you know, to us.
Yeah. So what's the dream? What's the ambition? Is it just keep doing what you're doing?
Yeah, be happy.
Be happy. Be happy.
No, but it is. It's like, as long as you're happy at what you're doing, that's because you can get lost in it. And
lost in it in a good way.
In a good way, in a bad way.
Right.
And I think that when things can happen incredibly quick, it's hard to remain present in what you do. And I'm very lucky that I have a family that keep me very grounded and remind me that, you know.
Were they at the premiere last night?
They were. Angela and Dave were there last night. They were a big hit with everyone. My dad kept him. He was walking him down the red carpet. He was on the phone at one point. Like, yeah, I'm on the carpet here with her. She's doing a movie, all the wonder. That is what's so great about my job, is that it tells stories. And just to remind yourself of the joy of it. And it's, you know, take the work seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously. And you know, it's the key is, you know, that's it. Be happy. Try and be as present as possible.
Yeah. So we spoke to you on the phone before when you were nominated for a breakthrough BAFTA. It was a list of people who were breakthrough Brits.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're slagging me off about that being a Brit.
I saw you doing the interview with Dermot O'Leary and putting on the accent. I saw you. You took the soup. So I'm delighted to hear your Midlands accent when you're back.
It's hard. I know, it's hard though. Like, because I came from Mullingar and I was living in Dublin. I used to get slagged off from my accent when I first moved to Dublin,
right,
being called a culchie, and then it slowly irons out. And then when I come back, can't help it.
I'd say your family now, if you're putting on the old English accent, they'd let you know pretty swiftly, would they?
But it's hard. It's hard to lose your accent. I'm very proud of being from Mullingar.
But surely, I remember hearing this, that if you're musical, are you musical?
Yeah, I used to play the saxophone as a kid.
Right, that if you're musical, you're prone to pick up accents quicker than if you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
It's by having a good ear.
Yes.
And you can hear, I think it's the idea of being able to identify when something sounds wrong, because then you can correct it. But if you can't hear what you're doing wrong, then I think it's hard to correct.
Okay, so if you were offered a good comedy script, would you take it?
Absolutely.
Would you? Yeah, yeah.
I think we need to, right?
What?
we've been doing a lot of the dark stuff.
And then you have the on your showreel, you have Savage Eye.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? We can refer back to that.
Yes.
That we started with comedy.
Yes.
And we've done a lot of the drama. So maybe it's time to do
The Virtues and Deceit. And what's the one you've just finished, Malpractice?
Malpractice, yeah. And it was medical drama.
Right.
Not many lols in it, but it's I worked with a fantastic medical team, and it was about an A&E doctor who gets caught in a malpractice.
And when will we see that?
I think early next year.
Right.
Yeah, directed by Philip Barantini, who brought out a film last year called Boiling Point with Stephen Graham.
Oh, so yes, yes.
Yeah.
And you've worked with Stephen Graham before. Mm-hmm. He's a brilliant actor. We've spoken to him, and a lovely guy.
An amazing guy.
Yeah.
Big heart.
Yes.
Yeah.
He came to acting late, did he? I think he did.
He went to drama school, and I know.
Yeah, wasn't there an epiphany? I remember that. There was an epiphany.
Yeah.
There was a moment, and it's because it was big, so we won't talk about it without him here.
Yeah.
But there was a huge moment where he decided to take the acting route, and it saved his life.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's amazing. He's amazing what he's done, and he's been an incredible friend to me and a mentor, and I'm very grateful for Stephen and
yeah,
having worked with him, but also having him as a friend.
Great. Right, tell him we were asking for him.
I will. Shout out, Stephen.
Yeah. So, great to see you. I just remind people that it's in cinemas now, The Wonder, with Niamh Algar, Florence Pugh and others. And then if you want to wait around, you can do until November 16th, where it'll be available on Netflix. Niamh, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Enjoy your trip to Mullingar. Thank you.
I will.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, a lot of us got used to appearing on screen for Zoom meetings during the pandemic. Well, the next tech innovation could be full-length holograms at your meetings. Yes, like it or not, your hologram could be teleporting into your morning Zoom. They're calling it holoportation. And the man behind it is David Nussbaum. He's CEO of Proto, and he's on the line now from the far side of America. How are you doing, David?
Hey, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Good to talk to you. We saw this mentioned in the newspaper yesterday, and it grabbed my attention. So it's a box. Tell us about it.
It is the world's first single passenger holoportation machine. So, Ray, once you're through with your broadcasting career, instead of broadcasting your voice, I could beam your entire body from wherever you want to be, and I can. It's the future of broadcasting,
and it's real time, is it?
It sure is. Yeah. So for me, it's just an extension of. It's like where Zoom ends and where physically being there begins. It looks like you're there, but it's still a virtual experience.
Wow. And I was reading some of your comments yesterday, and you were saying that we get an awful lot from the 3D hologram that we wouldn't get from a 2D iteration of ourselves.
Oh, yes. It's true because, you know, when a person is physically there, the body has this emotional and sometimes even a chemical reaction to this kind of a relationship. So much more engaging and real and physical than if you were to zoom in somewhere and you were just neck up on a 2D flat screen. So full body, full volumetric, three-dimensional, and it looks like you're really there. So
it's like a real conversation. Okay, so it's I saw the cost of it. It's thousands and thousands of dollars. And so what do you get for your thousands and thousands of dollars? So at my side, I'll have the camera set up and the box set up.
Well, it depends on, we have a large unit and we have a small unit. So we have a full size. So if you're 6 feet tall, you appear 6 feet tall. And then we have a small little Wonka Vision sized 2 foot tall device. So that is really one of the newest devices that we have. And that's what a lot of enterprise and commercial and retail customers are buying up right now.
So there was a mention of world leaders. So what you would have, I would imagine, what are all these boxes? No. So how would it work? Would there be loads of boxes around a table and one person who was hosting it be there? And then, I'm just names off the top of my head. There would be Rishi Sunak there, and then there'd be Joe Biden there, and Micheál Martin and other, and they'd all be as holograms in these boxes. Is that the way it would work?
Well, sure. That is one scenario. I envision it as you know, two world leaders are in their own offices and they're beaming into each other.
Yes, right. So one-on-one, yes. Yeah.
I mean, one-on-one in that sense, but the way it's being used mostly right now are for CEOs and entertainers and educators beaming in to do keynote speeches and to do presentations. It's also being used by art houses like Christie's to beam their artwork around the world instead of sending it on, you know, very expensive and, you know, flights around the world.
And what's your story, David? What's your background?
Well, I'm a wannabe broadcaster.
All right.
I wanted to be you, man. I wanted to be on the radio.
Right, okay. But you took the right route.
I don't know. I love what you're doing. I grew up listening to the Howard Stern show here in America.
Right.
And, you know, I just, for me, it's, I ran a division of a hologram entertainment company about a decade ago.
Right.
And I thought, if I can combine, you know, bringing back dead musicians, that's sort of what holograms were. Everybody was like, oh, that's what a hologram is, bringing back a dead musician. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool if instead of bringing back the dead, if we could actually beam the living, sort of like what us broadcasters do.
Yes.
So I combined my two things and I made this.
Wow. When did you do your first live sort of prototype thing? How many years ago, months ago?
Right. So I've been in the hologram beaming space for about 10 years, but with Proto, the first thing that we did was about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
It was incredible. The audience was gasping. It was like they were being visited by a person who physically couldn't be there.
Yeah.
And I have to mention that it's not just me. I'm surrounded by amazing engineers and developers.
But it does sort of open up opportunities, say for a little country like us, and we do chat shows. And during the pandemic, a lot of the interviews were done via Zoom or Team or whatever. But now with your technology, you could have them as a 3D hologram there in front of you.
It's already happening here in America.
Right.
Yeah, Ellen DeGeneres.
Yes.
She used to have a talk show, and she used it to beam into a store so she could interact with her fans. America's Got Talent. The final 11 finalists were all visited by their loved ones from around the world, from Spain and from Korea. They all beamed in.
Wow! Wow!
Yes.
This is the future. Well, it's the present, obviously, but it's the thing of sci-fi movies, isn't it? And that's the way a lot of things happen. Apart from the skateboard from Back to the Future, that's never quite happened,
mm-hmm.
really.
Back to the Future was one of the inspirations. I loved watching movies and television. And like a lot of people, I was inspired by what we saw on TV, you know, the Jetsons and Back to the Future and Star Wars. They promised us holoportation. So it was just a matter of time before somebody did it, and Proto's doing it.
You don't have to stand, do you? I'm just, you know, can you do it sitting down?
Sure. Yeah, no, we've seen people sitting down all the time.
Fine. Okay. No, just because standing up and delivering an interview.
You sit in a chair.
I suppose the next thing is that you will be able to position them anywhere. Like, you'll be able to position them outside the box, if you know what I mean.
Sure, yeah. We like to think inside the box here at Proto. But yes, eventually, as we continue to evolve and as technology continues to push forward, different form factors, maybe one day we will have that help me Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, no box, just straight hologram.
Yeah.
But right now, this is what we've got, and it's pretty
right.
great.
Yeah. David Nussbaum, CEO of Proto, thanks so much for joining us. And listen, like, you can do a podcast, David, if you want to scratch that broadcasting itch.
I did. I had one for 5 years. It was amazing.
There you go. It was amazing.
Hey, listen, Ray, next time we do this, I'm beaming in.
Okay.
None of those phone calls.
Okay.
Sure.
See you, David. Right.
Good take care.
Bye bye.
Beam you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 for your text. Back in March, Ernest Shackleton's lost ship Endurance was found after over 107 years in what was said to be a milestone of polar history. And now, one of Shackleton's descendants has made some music from none other than the explorer's floorboards. To explain, on the line we have Georgia Shackleton. Hello, Georgia.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm from County Kildare, just so you know. Because that's where Ernest Shackleton's originally from. You know that, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. You've got the museum there as well,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. It's Ballytor, is it? It's in Ballytor, I think, in County Kildare.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Great to talk to you. So you don't actually play the drums on the floorboard. What do you have? What instrument have you got?
No, and I don't think that the maker of this fiddle, this violin, would be very pleased with me had I played drums on it.
Yeah. So it's a fiddle made from the floorboards of one of Ernest Shackleton's houses. Now, before we get to that, just remind us about Ernest Shackleton and what you know of him and your connection to him.
So I'm very, very loosely connected to Sir Ernest Shackleton. I think around the age of when I was 10, my dad put together our family tree and discovered that there was a link there. We are descended from the Shackletons who stayed in Yorkshire around the 1600s, and Sir Ernest, of course, from the side who settled over in Ireland. And he was, of course, one of the most famous explorers of all time, really. Most famously, his first first expedition was the discovery expedition with Scott to go down to the South Pole, and it wasn't entirely successful. And he tried again on the Endurance, of course, which, as you mentioned, was found earlier in March this year, and that was also quite an ill-fated expedition, and he and all of his 28 crew members were stranded out in the ice, and after a good few years stuck out there, he managed to get everybody home eventually safely. So he's very, very well known and respected for his leadership and his extreme bravery that managed to save all those lives back on the Endurance expedition.
And was there a moment where you or your dad or your mum went after the connection?
Yeah, I'm not sure what sparked it, really. I think just because it is such an unusual name, so figured there must be a connection there somewhere. And
does your dad look like him? Was that mentioned?
He does, yeah. It's very weird. Yes, right. With it being such a loose connection as well, there's definitely a family resemblance. I think there's some very, very strong genes. It's in the top lip.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it. Oh, the top. Yeah, right. And a strong jawline as well. I'm just looking here at the picture.
Yeah. Strong jaw.
Yeah. So you're a fiddle player.
And that's right.
You saw this fiddle mentioned somewhere that was made from the floorboards of Ernest Shackleton's house, which is an odd thing. And what happened then?
I saw some press about the instrument around the time that the Endurance was discovered. And this chap in Edinburgh, Steve Burnett, a conservationist and a luthier, had built this instrument that combines floorboards from Shackleton's former home in Edinburgh, along with driftwood from East Lothian beaches. And I thought, how incredible. And I got in contact with him on the off chance that he might still have the instrument. I assumed that he would have made it for somebody. It would have been a commission, or it would have been sold. But he still had it, and he was very happy for me to come and play it.
And you went, and you did. And how was that?
It was quite remarkable, yes. So I met with Steve earlier in the year when we were gigging up there in my band. And we sort of started plotting a bit, because we realised that we have quite similar values, a lot of the material. So I'm a folk singer and fiddle player. A lot of the material that I write is of an environmental leaning. So in my band, the Shackleton Trio, we have a song for Lonesome George, the last of his species of giant tortoise from the Galapagos, and a song that's written for eels, quite an overlooked creature of the sea, perhaps, that is doesn't have a very good time. And Steve's purpose with this instrument is for it really to be used as a voice for the sea, and to try and raise some awareness of the plight of our oceans, and also our kind of dying rivers over here in the UK. So it seemed like a perfect opportunity to collaborate. So I've been borrowing the instrument for a few days and staying up near Edinburgh in Crail, and writing loads of tunes and songs on the instrument, and it's been really very special.
So it's driftwood floorboards, and there's writing on it as well.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a Frankenstein. and yeah, inside there's lots of fabulous stuff. It's a bit of a time capsule. So Steve has inscribed the instrument with the names of all 28 members of the Endurance expedition. It's also got the quote, "Through endurance we conquer," quite a famous Shackleton mm-hmm. quote. Also the mission statement of the instrument that I mentioned, "A voice from and for the sea." And it's also got a wonderful poem inside from Mel McMahon, "Oratory." So there's loads going on in there.
There is a lot going on for that little instrument, isn't there? Does it sound good, I suppose, is the big question.
It really, really does. It sounds gorgeous. It's got a very strong voice.
Yes. And did you play it somewhere special?
I did.
You go on.
I did. I took it on board the Discovery, so the boat that Shackleton first went out on a voyage on. And honestly, it just really came into its own there, being played on that boat, being played outside Shackleton's own cabin. It really, really just, it sounded gorgeous. That was its home.
Yes. you must have felt some connection then with your distant relation.
I think it's impossible not to, really. It was quite eerie. It was quite eerie feeling. And it felt like quite a privilege.
Mm. We've a bit of you playing, and we've a couple of clips of songs there as well. This is you on the famous, now famous, after what we've heard for the last 10 minutes, violin or fiddle. Have you been to Ireland?
Yeah, I have, but not for quite a few years.
Right. And have you been to the Shackleton Museum?
I haven't.
No.
I do plan and intend to visit one day, of course, but
yes.
No, I've
yes.
not been lucky enough to visit yet.
You can bring the fiddle with you. What's the difference between a fiddle and a violin?
Just the way it's played, really.
Oh, right. So the instrument itself is the same.
Yeah, there might be very slight changes. For example, in fiddle tradition, there's a lot of double stopping, playing two strings at once to kind of create a bigger volume and resonance and a different kind of feel. So sometimes the bridge that the strings rest upon might be shaved down slightly, a different shape to allow that technique to be played a bit easier, but not really too much difference in
so
the build of the instrument.
The group is called the Shackleton Trio, and this clip I think is about Ernest Shackleton. Would I be right? We play it through and you can tell us about it afterwards.
Yeah, sure.
We've been boiled for oil and kept your lanterns lit. We've been smelted, we've been pelted, oh will you never quit? We've avoided nets and heavy harpoon jets. What next does mankind have in store? Oh.
No, that's about whales. Sorry, that's about whales, that one, isn't it?
That is, yeah. So that little clip that you just played and the tune previously, they're both on the Shackleton violin. So that's two snippets of things that I wrote this week. And yeah, that song is for for our whales, to celebrate our beautiful whales. I was visiting a lady, a friend up in Crail, whose husband did quite a lot of work on South Georgia where Shackleton's buried, and she was showing me lots of photos of his work, and there were pictures of him there on the old whaling station where Shackleton got help to rescue everybody from the Endurance expedition. So, yes, after talking with her, that kind of inspired that song this week.
It's mad to think how the world has changed since his time.
And yeah.
I suppose you've wondered this, what would he think of the way the world's heading with climate change?
Yeah, definitely. I think, well, I've had conversations with Steve, the instrument's creator, about this as well. But I think we share the view that Shackleton and Scott and his colleagues of the time would have been right up there fighting the good fight were they alive today.
Yeah. So this is one of your singles. I'll just play a clip of this and you can tell us about this in a moment.
Opportunity arose and he was sure to seize. The year was 1901, he joined an expedition down to the South Pole to see uncharted lands. Along with Captain Scott, boarded the Discovery. Sickness struck the ship and it didn't go as planned.
That's the one about Ernest Shackleton. See?
Yeah, that's right. yeah, so that is... That's Endurance, which is a song from our first album with the Shackleton Trio. Yes, and it's, well, it starts there with his journey on the Discovery, but then it tells us all about the Endurance expedition and kind of celebrates that in the song.
That Discovery earlier in the year, amazing. Yeah, and to see, you know, the word Endurance emblazoned across the front, the bow of the ship. It's just mad. It's so well preserved.
I know, it's insane, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's incredible that it's been preserved so well. I don't know how or if they will manage to ever be able to recover that ship. It would be amazing if
that
they
would
could.
But, and you could play the fiddle on that as well. Georgia. It's Georgia or Georgina?
Georgia.
Georgia, right, Georgia. Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us today, Georgia. Thank you. Thank you, Marion. Gormakut, 51551, ray@rte.ie. A fiddle is a violin with attitude, says Margaret. And Mark in Toronto has been on. He says, it's a fiddle when you're buying it and it's a violin when you're selling it. There you go. Could you please say hi to our daughter, Grace, who lives in Christchurch, New Zealand. She celebrates her birthday tomorrow and she listens to the show every day on podcast. So there it is. Happy birthday, Grace. They all miss you and they say happy birthday. That's Mum and Dad. Now, let's get to the quiz. We have two quizzers standing by and we have a theme tune. Yes, we do. And a prize. And it's a two-night stay in Carton House, cartonhouse.com. It's a Fairmont hotel down in County Kildare. Surrounded by over 1,000 acres of sweeping parkland, ancient woodlands, there's lakes, there's a meandering river, and it makes it the most picturesque backdrop for an autumn stay, just 25 minutes from Dublin. And it's a two-night stay for two people and dinner on one of the evenings. Hello, Sean Curry.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Sean Curry, who would like a curry tonight, but he's having a salmon. Is that
exactly.
It?
Exactly. That's exactly it. I would love a curry tonight, but I have to have a salmon to look after me body a bit.
All right, okay. Well, you can curry a salmon, Sean Curry.
I know you can curry a salmon, but I suppose I could curry. Well, I will be currying a salmon. The surgeon said the salmon will be curried later, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
One
so
way or the other.
You're a Meath man in Dublin.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, moved there about a year and a half ago.
Right.
Lived all my life at the one address, so it was a big change. But,
right. And how are you getting on with the change?
Oh, it's great. Really enjoying it. It's lovely up here. You're surrounded by country people. God bless it. It's great crack.
Yeah. So hold on. You moved. Where are you living now?
I'm living in Swords.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yes, yes.
The kids all moved. They're abroad. One's in the States and one's in England. And I'm married with grandchildren. And we had a great big house with a great big garden and stuff. So we decided we'd move up a bit closer. So, you know, we can do all the walking bit. Even if I can walk down for a pint here without any worry.
So you downsized?
Absolutely. Well, it's not called downsize anymore. It's called right size.
It's called right size. Very good. I haven't heard that expression.
Oh, yeah. That's the in word. Right size.
Because downsize has sort of negative connotations, does it? Right. Oh,
yes, they are right sizing.
You're right sizing.
Yeah, that's what we did, yeah.
And you're right close to the airport if people are around the world. That's handy as well, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. My darling wife Paul actually works for Aer Lingus, so it's very handy.
Oh, very handy.
That was another reason.
Usually people go the opposite direction, don't they, Sean? They go out from the city as opposed to towards the city.
Yeah, well, you see, if you're living, I lived all my life out, and you have to, where we are now, you'd have to get a bus to get a bus, you know what I mean?
Yeah, this is where you used to live, yes, yeah.
Yeah, so we do, yeah, we just then got rid of one car, and we can walk and do everything, so it's a whole new life for me now, it's great, in fact, really enjoying it.
Giving you a new energy.
Really enjoying it.
Yeah, where did are you retired or what?
Well, I'm sort of semi-retired. I worked in the bank for years, and then I had a mortgage business, so I do a little bit of contract work. My mother is 98, still lives by herself at home, so I look after, look after her, she looks after me still. But she's a marvellous woman, yeah.
98, what's her name?
Margaret Curry in Bellevue. She's just an amazing woman. She just...
98. You know,
still lives alone, still lives at home, and still does what she has to do, and she's just an amazing woman.
So she's independently living at 98?
Absolutely. And she has no foreign body, she has her own whatever, her own teeth, everything.
Right. She's no hips or knees
just one of these Kerry women that just, you know.
That's brilliant. Hello, Margaret, if you're listening.
Margaret in
Bellevue. Margaret Curry. Peg Curry, I suppose. Is it Peg?
Peg Curry, Peg Curry. Originally from Tralee in County Kerry.
Right, so. Brilliant. You're up against Brian Hyde, who's in Rathdowney in County Leash. Hello, Brian.
How are you, Ray? How's it going?
Yeah, that's Sean on the other line there.
How are you, Sean? How are you?
Not too bad, Brian. Thank you.
So you're on the way back, are you, from work?
No, I'm back in the yard.
You're back in the yard.
I work in Midland Hardware there, and... I'm just back in the yard now.
So you were doing deliveries all day, was that it?
Doing deliveries all day, very busy, but kept going all the time. Shout out to all the lads and lassies in Midland Hardware.
Right. And do you supply to the building industry as well as... it's mainly the building industry, is it?
Mainly the building industry,
So it's bricks and wood and all that sort of thing.
Timber and all that type of stuff. White goods, all that type of stuff.
Great. Okay. Yeah. So who's waiting at home for you?
Anna, my wife, she's in work at the moment. She's a nurse in Mount Carmel in Rosgrave.
Right, and you used to be in a band together, too?
We used to be in a band called Last of the Summer Winos. Then we broke up and we started a new band called The Wave of the Fairies.
But you didn't break up as a couple?
No,
the band broke up. Okay, yes. So you formed a band called Away with the Fairies.
Yeah, then there was two of us, then three of us, then there was four of us,
right.
And then there was three of us, and then there was two of us.
Right.
And now there's... Semi the time, two of us.
Right, semi the time, two of you. Which is yourself and Anna.
Yeah, myself and Anna.
You're away with the fairies. What sort of stuff do you do?
A bit of folky stuff, bit of blues, bit of Eric Clapton, a bit of Neil Young.
Yeah.
So I hope all the music is old.
Yeah, and is it pub or weddings or what?
Well, we do a wedding, but it'd want to be a kind of bespoke wedding now.
Yes.
It wouldn't want to be our usual wedding. You know?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because you're not gonna be playing the hits as such.
No, we're not. No.
No.
Oh, well, if everyone was over 50, we'd be playing the hits.
From
what they remember.
Yeah. Okay, right. And your mother is not 98, but she's 89.
She'd be 89 in November.
November, right.
Yeah.
Seeing as we're giving the shout-outs to mothers, you better name her.
Eileen Hyde in Rathdowney.
How are you doing, Eileen?
Hiya, ma'am.
Yeah, there you go. And she's hale and hearty.
She's hale and hearty, thanks be to God.
Great.
Living at home, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And you're interested in reading Prince Harry's book called Spare?
No, I'm not at all. I told Gilly that I would read it if someone gave it to me, but I wouldn't buy it.
You wouldn't buy it, yeah. I don't know about you, but down in Kildare, if you're called a spare, it wasn't a compliment.
No, that was a Cork one as well. Yeah,
is it?
You're bleeding spare,
yeah. Go ahead, you spare. Look at that spare over there.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe it comes from the spare wheel or something.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Brian and Sean, so three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. Go for a shorter clip and you get 2 points because it's more difficult. Whoever gets the most points is the winner. And if the drawing points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. And here we go.
Thank you.
Okay, Sean, it is to you. We go first, and it's 1992, which is 30 years ago, and we're starting.
Yeah.
We're starting at the movies. What do you want to do, long or short?
Oh, down in Meath, we need every pint we can get now because our football's gone fairly bad, so I'll go for two.
Two, okay. This animated movie from Walt Disney told the story of a man who found a magic lamp. Can you name the movie? Here we go.
Princess Jasmine,
you're very...
wonderful, magnificent, glorious, punctual.
Punctual.
Punctual. Sorry.
Beautiful.
Aladdin?
Yes, it is Aladdin. 2 points. Well done. Good
Thanks
start, Sean. Brian, movies from 1992, long or short?
Short.
Short.
Two-pointer, yeah.
Yeah, this movie from 1992 about a former Secret Service agent and a famous singer starred Kevin Costner, Whitney Houston. Can you name it?
And you're ready to die for me?
It's the job.
Why?
I can't sing.
Well,
The Bodyguard.
Yes,
the bodyguard.
It is The Bodyguard. Okay. 2 points each. Back to you, Sean. Music from 1992. What do you want to do?
I either know this or I won't know it. I'll go short.
Okay, this song hit the top of the Irish charts in 1992. Can you name the band or the song?
Well, it's too late
tonight. U2.
Yes. Yeah, U2 is right, yeah.
It is U2.
It is U2, yeah. That's one.
Thank you.
Probably their most famous song won by U2, and you get 2 points for that.
Thank you very much.
Brian, would you read Bono's biography?
I would definitely, yeah.
Surrender.
If I lose, you can send that to me.
Okay. Here, listen, send us in a list, Brian. And we put a package together. Okay, music from 1992.
I go short again.
Short, okay. Another song that hit the top of the Irish charts in 1992. The name of the singer, the name of the song, please. Here we go.
Sometimes when I look at you, you take my breath away.
Oh. Linda Martin, I'd say, is it?
It is.
Oh, wow, Jesus.
Yeah, well done.
sorry.
Yeah, because it's hard to tell. That's Why Me, but it's a bit of the song that you probably wouldn't recognise, but you got it right. Why Me?
Nice one.
Linda
nice
Martin,
one.
Winner of the 1992 Eurovision Song Contest. You got 2 points. 2 points. Okay, to you, Sean, final question. Both of you are on four, so it's down to the wire. Final question on news and current affairs.
Short again.
Okay. The man who led Fianna Fáil for 13 years resigned in 1992. Can you name him?
Yesterday I resigned from the office of Taoiseach by placing my resignation in the hands of the President.
The Bold Charlie.
It is the Bold Charlie, Hoggy.
I won't say it. Sorry, I didn't mean the Bold Charlie. I meant the Bold Charlie in a nice sense.
Yes, yeah. 2 points for that. Now, Brian.
I go short.
You do. You have to go short, don't you? In 1992, this woman called the year an Annus Horribilis. After family turmoil and a fire at one of her homes. Can you name her?
Queen Elizabeth. It has turned out to be an Annus Horribilis.
It is Queen Elizabeth
II.
Second, right. There you go. Clean sheet for both our contestants today. 6-6, which brings us to a tiebreak question. We asked both Brian and Sean this question before they went on air. Whoever answers closest to the correct answer is today's winner, and I'll just repeat the question for our listeners now. According to Google Maps, how long would it take to cycle from Malin Head to Mizzen Head? And many a person has done that for charity over the years. So how long would it take to cycle from Malin Head to Mizzen Head? Sean, your guess.
I said 18 hours 10 minutes, but I meant on an electric bike.
Man, 18 hours. It's 571 kilometres, just for your information. And what about you, Brian? What was your guess?
I said 1740.
Right. Well, both your guesses are quite close to each other, but quite far away from the actual answer, which is 30 hours.
Whoa.
Yeah. And Sean will know, because he's worked with figures all his life, that he is closest to the correct answer, so he's today's winner. Brian, sorry about that.
If I was good at figures, I wouldn't be retired.
Go on with that, yeah. Listen, Brian, we're going to send you a couple of Radar Show mugs, one for you and one for Anna.
Thanks a million, Ray. Thanks a million.
And keep her lit, as they say. See you,
thanks,
Brian.
A million.
Good luck.
Well
see
done,
you now.
Sean.
Bye,
thank
bye,
you.
Bye, bye,
bye. Thank you very much, bro. Thank you.
That's Brian there in Rathdown, you County Leash. Sean Curry and Swords, you can now go to cartonhouse.com and see what's in store for you. Because you and a person of your choice, Paula, is it? Paula? Did you
Paula
say
is right,
yes. Paula will be heading off to Carton House down just outside Maynooth in County Kildare, and it's lovely down there, and you'll have a brilliant time. Well
super
done.
Super stuff. Okay. I really appreciate that now. No, thank you very much.
Yeah, great talking to you, Sean. Mind yourself.
And a Merry Christmas.
Okay, that's too early for that, and no.
Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551, we have some great ideas of how to occupy the young people in your life during the midterm break after some music from Ed Sheeran. Ed Sheeran, Castle on the Hill. Now, we're fast approaching the bank holiday weekend and the midterm and Halloween, of course. So there will be time, and there will be time where you'll need something to do. Our next guest can offer up some suggestions when it comes to baking with the little people in your life. Laura Gannon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ray. How are you?
Good.
Good.
And you're perfect because you're part of Savour Kilkenny, and that's on over the bank holiday weekend.
Indeed.
And you're going to be on Saturday.
Yes.
And you'll be doing baking for children.
Absolutely, yeah.
And just better mention that you're from Cake Face, which is a sort of cafe you run with your husband, Rory.
I do. Down in Kilkenny, yeah.
And we'll get your personal story soon because you met down in Ballymaloe.
We did indeed.
That's just to whet their appetite, so they'll stay with us. Okay, so Savour Kilkenny, is this an annual thing?
Yeah, Savour Kilkenny is basically the biggest, well, one of the biggest food festivals in Ireland. It's been run for about 16 years now, and it's gone from, we have 85 artisan food stalls this weekend coming. We have demos with some of the greatest chefs in Ireland. Rory O'Connell will be there, Derry Clark will be there. You know, we've
Kevin
got
Kevin Dundon.
So lots of different things going on. A lot of the restaurants and hotels in Kilkenny have pop-up nights from Michelin star to casual dining. So it's just a foodie mecca for the next 3 days down in Kilkenny.
And you're showing parents and children little Halloween treats to make.
Yeah, so myself and my little daughter Riley, who's 5-year-old, are going to be opening up the main stage. We're going to have a bit of fun. It won't be too serious. There'll be a lot of messing going on. And at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday of a bank holiday, we're going to entertain the under 10s, I guess.
And if you're not making a mess, you're not having fun.
No, absolutely. Especially with children. Exactly.
Yeah. So sticky marshmallow brains.
Yeah.
I like the sounds of this.
Yeah,
now.
These are super easy and they're super gooey. I mean, if you don't have a child who doesn't like pink marshmallows and
Rice Krispies,
there's something gone wrong. So, I mean, we have a few healthier options, but this is just for a bit of fun. So we actually make our own homemade marshmallows in Cake Face, but you don't have to do that for this. You can just buy the shop bought marshmallows. Then you get your Rice Krispies or your puffed rice and a little bit of butter, and you melt the marshmallows together. You add in your Krispies. These are a version of a Rice Krispie bun the world. Yeah. But we're going to mold them into a shape of a brain and then we're going to drizzle some red icing on them to make them into the kind of...
A little bit scary looking.
A little bit freaky. And you can throw a few sprinkles and sparkles on them. You know, this is what kids love to do. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you should overcomplicate it when you're dealing with littlies. If they can get messy and if they can lick their fingers, then you're on a winner.
And there's something at the end that they can actually eat.
Yeah, exactly. And they can do themselves. Yes. Like, they get pretty involved.
Great.
So that's
good. We're going to put these recipes up on our website. Spidey energy balls.
Yeah, so this is kind of, I'm trying to get, you know, everyone, Halloween is a sugar fest for kids, but this is kind of a little bit more of a healthy option. And we actually, myself and my two kids make this at home in the mornings. And I mean, a recipe or not, it's toasted almonds, it's maple syrup, it's dried fruit, all blitzed together and rolled in a ball with coconut. We put a few little chocolate spider legs on it and a few little dots for eyes. And all of a sudden you've convinced your children to eat oats, prunes, all the good stuff.
And a spider.
In a spider form. So, I mean, I think that's a winner for a parent.
I remember seeing you on with Nevin Maguire a few Christmases ago and I was struck by your story because you were an auctioneer.
I was.
And Rory, your husband, was
a chemical engineer.
And how did you meet?
Well, we kind of took a career break. I don't know if Rory had it. Well, anyway, time of our life, I took a career break, headed to Ballymaloe. I always had a niggle that I wanted to be in food. Went and did the 16-week course in Ballymaloe and we met there and kind of just went
You'd never met before?
No, never. Actually, do you know what? We lived about 100 yards away from each other. Never knew each other near UCD because he was in college there. We probably went to the same spa, but never crossed over. Met in Ballymaloe. We moved to France. Straight after Ballymaloe finished on a Friday, we went on a Sunday, worked in a couple of French restaurants together there, moved down to the Riviera. It was kind of like a J1 in your 30s. So, and basically that's where we became pastry chefs. So we learned in France, we moved to London, worked in like the Savoy and the Connacht and stuff like that. So
the stuff that you sell in a Cake Face, it's like you'd get in a patisserie in Paris.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. That's kind of
but a, it's that
standard.
Yeah, that's our point of sale. I mean, yes. We trained in France and we've trained in, you know, done some Michelin star dessert work in London. Mm. So from our side of things, it's not your traditional, like, I don't make a good apple tart. This, you know, yeah, what I mean? I do.
When
you
I heard that
make
yesterday,
better apple tarts than me.
Yeah, well, my mother probably.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would hold the hands up high. We do a little bit more. It's a little bit more kind of, I guess it's called fancy, but it's a little bit more different. It's kind of what you would see in some of the nice patisseries abroad or, you know, in France and stuff like that.
Right. And the fact the chemical engineer, does that help?
Because it definitely does help.
Yeah, because they say cooking is art and baking is science.
Absolutely. If I don't have a recipe in front of me, I get kind of nervous. Like if somebody went, oh, you just throw a bit of that. You don't just throw a bit of into baking. Baking is like definitely a science. So yeah, from that side of things, there's a little bit. And there's a little bit of experimentation as well that comes with it. So yeah, so right beside Cake Face in Kilkenny, we have our production kitchen, which we call the lab, which is where we experiment and make all the different desserts and stuff like that. So customers can, you can see in the windows, we have it's a shop front.
Yes.
So you can see myself and Rory or whoever's helping on the day in, covered in chocolate, covered in flour, covered in whatever. But, you know, you can watch it.
Trying out new things.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then we have the cookery school at the next door down. So that's where the kind of kids demos come in. So we opened the cookery school in January about this year. So still a little bit pandemic. You know, we were just coming out of it at that stage. So it's the building became available. We're on the kind of the other end of Kilkenny, not the castle end, the further end. So it's a little bit quieter. So we're kind of near Canis's Cathedral. And the cookery school was an old garage, so it's a big space. So we have like now we fit it out as a purpose book, 10 stations, 20 people. Right. So we do like kids camps. We have, but it's also to get kids cooking and baking and get them in early as you can. Yeah. My kids are up on the countertop at home with their hands in flour all the time. But even to develop, you know, we do a teenager camp. We've one coming up after Easter. So it's kind of from 11 to 16 year olds. So they'll begin there working with ingredients, you know, making pasta, making pizza, but making it out of, you know, proper, knowing where
so
it comes
important.
From.
So
amazingly important.
Because we've created a distance between ourselves and food.
Completely, yeah.
Because we get a package, throw it in the oven, eat it.
But these kids, they're amazing and they're so good. Like they're making, and they're going home and showing their parents that they've, and it's not just around sweet stuff. It is about, you know, local product. You know, we're getting, you know, eggs locally. Yeah. You know, this is all at our fingertips. And for me to get the kids on board is essential.
And so. would you consider, for example, bringing a franchise to the RTE campus?
I don't know. We have a nice little, I did bring some deliveries today, but I don't think it's a regular thing.
No, because I'm just looking at the pictures and I've been talking to you before we went on air. I love what you do. So you do sandwiches as well as the...
Yeah, we do. We have a small, like we do a nice lunchtime offering, 4 different sandwiches. It changes throughout the day. Whatever we have in the fridge, we make our own hummuses and we get local, we have pastrami and all that kind of yummy stuff.
Yeah,
so everything is made like in...
Right. Do you miss the auctioneering?
I do not.
No.
It was a great time in my life, but no, I think I'm happily found my spot now at this stage. So,
what do you say to people about a big change like that? We've about a minute left. You know, because it is, you would, huge change, as did Rory.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of people have itches they feel they want to scratch, but probably don't have the courage to do it.
Yeah, it was like a big breath out, though, for me. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, suddenly I realised that making that change, when I had to be able to do it, I was able to go, oh, finally. You know what I mean? I think you have to make the leap. And I just feel so much more that there was never a right. This was always the right kind of journey for me. So, you just have to be brave.
You never look back.
No, but I was young enough to do it. Like, I mean, the older you get, the more brave you have to be. So, like, I don't think I'd be doing a big change now with 2 little people in my life as well.
And
so,
more commitments and all that.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, Cake Face and Save for Kilkenny is on over the bank holiday weekend at 10 o'clock Saturday morning. It is Laura and her little 5-year-old daughter, Riley, on the stage making Halloween treats.
That's it.
Lovely to see you, Laura.
Yeah,
thanks so much.
To be here.
And thanks. I can't wait to see what you brought us. That's it from us. Cormac is on his own on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.